Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, July 21st, 2015. And as usual, we'd like to thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
A messenger of court attempts to attach property belonging to Movement for Democratic Change founding president Morgan Tsvangirai.
This was just overzealous on the part of the messenger of court and those who were instructing him. They thought that they could take this opportunity to embarrass Morgan Tsvangirai as president.
More than 500 workers have been fired in Zimbabwe since last Friday following a Supreme Court ruling that companies can terminate employees' contracts without offering benefits.
I believe that this report is untrue. There are a few companies that had pending issues in terms of retrenchment with workers, but it's not true to say that there's a spate or an uprising of employers letting go of employees.
And more than 130 former Shabane mine workers have been evicted from company houses in Shabane, Midlands Province.
Please do stand by for these stories and much, much more coming up.
A messenger of court today attempted to attach property belonging to Movement for Democratic Change founding president Morgan Tsvangirai and his party over a labor dispute in which former workers are demanding payment of outstanding salaries and terminal benefits. Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
The messenger of court, who was accompanied by heavily armed police details traveling in two trucks, went to Tsvangirai's Highlands mansion and the MDCT's Harvest House headquarters with the intention of attaching the property of the former prime minister and the opposition party. MDCT attorney and party secretary general Douglas Monzora claims that the incident was well choreographed to embarrass Tsvangirai, as the opposition party had obtained a permanent stay of execution in the matter.
Well, this was just overzealous on the part of the messenger of court and those who were instructing him. They thought that they could take this opportunity to embarrass Morgan Tsvangirai as president, as well as embarrass the MDC. Yet, we are in possession of a court order that we won, where we were allowed by the court that our property must not be attached until the matter is finalized.
Monzora says the MDCT would file for contempt of court following what he called a public drama today by the messenger of court and other arms of the government. He also alleged that lawyers, consultants Beru Services, representing former party director of elections, Twende Pishone, and 16 others, are bogus.
They were basing their actions on an old judgment. I think it is because they changed their lawyers, consultancy, something. There is no legal firm by that name in the books of the legal profession that we are in possession of. We are also going to approach the court and say there is contempt of court. There is a judgment in favor of the MDC.
Wilson Manasse, an attorney who represented Shone and colleagues when the case was heard in the labor court, said he could not comment on the matter, noting that he was no longer representing them. Efforts to get a comment from consultants Beru Services were fruitless as they were not answering their phones. Shone and several other workers left the MDCT at the height of factional fighting in the party, which led to the formation of a breakaway group led by former secretary Tendai Biti. They were dismissed for allegedly failing to report for duty at Harvest House. In another court-related matter, a Harare magistrate today denied bail to leaders of the National Vendors Union of Zimbabwe, Samuel Wadzai and Steno Zorwadza, who are facing public violence charges. Magistrate Tendai Mawe ruled that Wadzai, Zorwadza, and 14 other vendors who were arrested by council police during a crackdown on illegal street traders were likely to disturb peace if they were released on bail, arguing that the crackdown on vendors was still going on. Zorwadza, Wadzai, and others are denying the charges, saying they were arrested by council police when they were demanding that authorities release wares of the vendors that had been confiscated by Harare Municipal Police last week. The case is expected to continue on August 4th. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
More than 500 workers have been fired in Zimbabwe since last Friday following a Supreme Court ruling that companies can terminate employees' contracts without offering benefits. According to media reports and the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions, companies that have terminated workers' contracts include Croco Motors, Pelams and TN Harlequin Newstedward Bank, which have given the affected workers a month's notice to cut ties with them as per the court ruling. ZCTU President George Ngiwane told Studio 7 they held a meeting today with government officials in an effort to address the crisis. But Busisa Moyo, president of the Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries, says the figure of workers who have lost their jobs is being exaggerated.
I believe that this report is untrue. There are a few companies that had pending issues in terms of retrenchment with workers, but it's not true to say that there's a spate or an uprising of employers letting go of employees. Employers need workers. That's in business. We recognize the need for labor. That's why we want to save these companies so that jobs are saved. That's the whole point. So no person will lay off a person he needs. If we need people in our factory, no one is going to be laid off. I mean, it's where a company is unable to produce or for some other reason. Then the employer, what has been happening is that the employer up to now has just been stuck with those people regardless of the fact that the employer is no longer in production or able to produce. So it becomes a responsibility, and that's not business. And so those are the sort of manifestations that you are going to see, but it's not true to say employers are getting out of hand in letting people go. I don't think that that's factual. There's no evidence of that. There's a few companies here in Bulawayo, a few in Harare, that had pending issues that have then taken action, but it's not even, I don't think one can relate it to the judgment.
The issue of retrenchment packages, I think, is one issue that workers are saying must be addressed. Is there anything that can be done?
It's another form of termination of a contract. There are various forms. Dismissal is one, retrenchment is another, notice is another. There are three options that an employer can make in letting go or restructuring their labor force. So it's just one of three options. And some companies are still offering retrenchment packages, depending on the position of the financial position of the company. Those are different situations.
That was Busisa Moyo, president of the Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu. At the same time, constitutional law expert Love Momaduku, who represented Zuva Petroleum workers in the Supreme Court case, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu they will appeal against the Supreme Court ruling at the Constitutional Court.
There is room to appeal to the Constitutional Court. All what is required is to raise constitutional issues, to say that the judgment of the Supreme Court is in contravention of certain provisions of the Constitution. And then, in fact, it does contravene a number of provisions of the Constitution. So there is room to appeal to the Constitutional Court.
Specifically, what areas would you say goes against the Constitution?
Countless areas. One of the most important areas where it is going against the Constitution is its sudden discovery that, in fact, all along for the past 30 years, we were under a law that can allow hiring and firing. As everyone knows, from 1980, this country has never had a law that allows an employer to hire and fire. And the Supreme Court cannot just discover some law which is hidden somewhere and say then this law is there and was supposed to be used and always available. That's what we would call an unconstitutional exercise of decision-making by the Supreme Court. So it's a constitutional issue.
There are reports that hundreds of workers have been retrenched. Are you surprised by this development?
We are not surprised.
That was constitutional law expert Love Momaduku speaking with Studio 7 from Harare.
More than 130 former Shaban mine workers have been evicted from company houses they occupied in the Maglas section of the Shabane Midlands province. Former worker pensioner Andrew Lunga says they were given only 48 hours to leave, but most of them are staying put as they are owed thousands of dollars in salary arrears and some benefits backdating to 2009. Shabani and Getz mines, which were once the world's sixth largest asbestos-producing entities with an annual output of more than 140,000 tons, at their peak employed more than 5,000 workers and supported at least 200 downstream industries. Studio 7 failed to reach the mine management for a comment as they were not responding to calls. Lunga tells Studio 7 the affected families are now selling tomatoes and other items in an effort to raise legal funds to challenge the evictions.
What is happening is they file some summons to the Messenger of Court, and the messengers of court come in and oust the property of those ex-workers. Whether they are there or they are not there, they'll just break in and take things out. Now, these people, they have no money. They're still waiting for their arrears in salary, and the pensioners are waiting also for their gratuity and arrears of payments. So there's nowhere to go. They just stick around that house, or some neighbors will just say, bring your things in our house, we keep you for the time being, while we're still waiting for your arrears, of which those arrears in salaries, I doubt very much we'll come across on those monies.
Is the mine giving the former workers an option to rent the houses?
They don't. What happened actually, this mine was being owned by Nesti Mawere. Now, when Mawere was there, he promised to give the houses to the workers, one, and giving them 20% shares after 5 years. Now, due to what happened during those days, when Mawere was being victimized by the government, he sort of going to South Africa. We were staying all along. So everything was distorted. Giving the houses to the workers, that was a non-starter. And the 20% after 5 years, that was a non-starter. And since 2009, we weren't getting the exact salaries we should be getting. We were being given either $50, $40 a month, saying the rest will be calculated and you'll be given later on. Up to now, nothing has materialized.
That was former Shaban mine worker Andrew Lunga in Shishavane.
More than 200 Zimbabweans are expected to attend the Mennonite World Conference in Pennsylvania, USA, starting tomorrow. Bishop Sinda Ngulube of the Brethren in Christ Church says the conference is an international community of Baptist-related churches linked together for fellowship and worship. The Mennonite World Conference represents the majority of the global family of Christian churches rooted in the 16th century radical reformation in Europe, particularly in the Anabaptist movement. Members of the organization includes 103 Mennonite and Brethren in Christ national conferences of churches from 57 countries with 1.3 million baptized believers. The organization holds a global assembly every 6 years. The previous four assemblies were held in Paraguay, Zimbabwe, Calcutta, and Canada. Ngulube tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube it's exciting that Zimbabweans are attending the conference.
It's a gathering of the Mennonite World Conference. All the Anabaptist members are gathered here this whole week.
And what is the theme of the conference?
Working with God. Normally this conference happens every 6 years. So the last one was in Paraguay in 2009, and this year we are here in Pennsylvania.
So now, can you tell us about Zimbabweans who have come here? Are they going to be presenting any papers?
There will be some of us, or some of the Zimbabweans will be presenting some papers. May not really be specific right now because I don't have the program on hand. And others will be presenting pieces of music, like our choir, the Brethren Choral Sounds.
That was Bishop Sinda Ngulube of the Brethren Church speaking with Studio 7 from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, right here in the USA.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
funerals are the only thriving business in town.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says the United Nations voted in favor of the Iran deal with hope of positive transformation expected in that country. He said the U.N.'s vote is an indication that they support what Iran and six other nations agreed on in Vienna. VOA Persian News Network Satar Dekaresh spoke with Mr. Kerry about the deal in an exclusive interview on Monday.
Well, what the vote means is that people are hopeful that the transformation is going to take place over the course of the next months and years. They're voting for the agreement. They're voting to support what Iran and six other nations agreed on in Vienna. And I think it's an expression of confidence in that agreement, and it's an expression of hope for the future, for Iran, for the rest of the world. Obviously, that agreement is based on the hope that the nuclear problem will be resolved, that Iran will become a nation in good standing with the rest of the international community. But it's going to be proven not by a vote and not by the words. It's going to be proven by the actions over the course of the next implementation of the agreement.
Mr. Secretary, you mentioned that there will be some transformation. When the deal was announced last week, inside Iran, people came out to the streets. They poured into the streets. They wanted to show their joy. They were celebrating. Do you think it was too early, considering that the U.S. Congress has to review the deal? And also inside Iran, Iran's Supreme National Security Council has to approve it, and also the Majlis.
Well, no, I don't think it's ever too early for people to express their feelings and to be heard about how they feel about an agreement. Maybe that will have some impact on other people looking at this, and they'll understand how the people of Iran feel about it. So I hope it's a message that's a positive one, but I wouldn't say it's too early. I hope that Congress will see the possibilities of this and that the Supreme Council will see the possibilities.
That was John Kerry, U.S. Secretary of State, speaking with VOA Persian News Network's Setare Derakshesh. Under the deal, Iran is expected to stop processing nuclear material in exchange of the lifting of some targeted sanctions.
The human desire to give a dignified burial to kith and kin, even in the hardest of times, is seeing some enterprising individuals finding some opportunities in the funeral services sector, largely dominated by a few major companies. Our correspondent Taurai Shava brings us more.
Zimbabweans, like other people across the world, respect the dead and try as much as possible to ensure that when their loved ones die, they are given a decent burial. In a country grappling with dire economic problems, such decency is often put to the test, as burying the dead is relatively costly, especially in urban areas. For many years, the funeral services sector has been dominated by a few established companies with branches in most cities and towns. In Zimbabwe's second largest city, Bulawayo, a number of small funeral parlors have sprung up over the years, mostly in the Kelvin North Industrial Area, which is within the vicinity of high-density suburbs like Pelandaba, Magwegwe, Mpopoma, Nkulumane, Pumula and Lobengula. One of the companies is Exodus Funeral Services. Founder and director Charles Chuwake says he started the company in 2007 after working as a driver for a big funeral company. Chuwake says he formed the company after realizing that funeral services offered by big companies were out of reach for most ordinary people. The company's client services manager, Winnie Ndlovu, says they are targeting low-income groups.
We're looking at people who are unemployed, those that are selling in the street. We're looking at people that are in the flea markets who are selling. We're looking at people who are selling even tomatoes. We're looking at people that are just doing things on their own to make life go on. Because with us, you can come straight to us and pay your premium. We allow people to form associations like burial societies. And then from there, they work together.
Ndlovu says Exodus Funeral Services allows funeral policy holders who pay an average of $15 per month to include children over the age of 21, unlike some big companies that have age restrictions on such dependents. There are some instances in which some small funeral companies reportedly fail to provide expected services to clients, mainly due to lack of the requisite capacity. But Chuwake says his company offers an array of services similar to those offered by bigger companies, adding that it has never encountered any problems in providing service to clients.
Well, the services which we provide here, we are just doing the same as those big guns. We are in the same field, we are doing the same, but basically what we normally offer, we are manufacturing our own coffins, we do the coffins, we do the body washing, we've got the mortuary.
Another indigenous company operating in the highly competitive funeral services sector is Flair Funeral Services, which was established a few years ago by former foreign currency dealer and cross-border trader Swongile Dube. Dube says the company is breaking even, though competition is getting stiff every day. The expanding funeral services sector has also boosted the operations of informal coffin-making businesses in the city. 27-year-old Neva Wonye, a coffin maker at the Mashumba home industry in Nguboyenja high-density suburb, used to work at a private funeral parlor as a casual laborer. He says he makes about 20 ordinary coffins a month, being sold for $50, and a few caskets that fetch up to $400 each. Another coffin maker, Kelvin Tembo, who started making coffins 2 years ago, says he learned basic carpentry at high school and perfected his skills through learning from some of the experienced carpenters at Mashumba. Like his colleagues, Tembo, a father of two, sells the coffins directly to individual clients and funeral service companies.
A day you can make about 10 coffins, depend on how customers comes here. We can sell about, it depends on touters. There are touters here. So we can manage to talk to the touters there. We can manage to sell about 7 a day coffins. There are different types of coffins. There are dooms and budget. Those ones are cheap. Budget, they are cheap. Like this one here that I'm scraping here.
Despite this lucrative business, the Bulawayo City Council is not benefiting much from these operations as it is getting little revenue from this sector, which includes the provision of graves to all bereaved families. Mayor Martin Moyo explains.
The figures I have here for last month, we had, say, 381 deaths. I'm not so sure of the price of a grave, but if it's, say, $50 per grave, so you are saying 381 times 50. So it's really not a lot of money.
Although death haunts many people, it appears as if coffin making and burial services are the only lucrative business in a city ravaged by Zimbabwe's harsh economic environment. Most big companies have shut down in the city, once considered the country's industrial hub. Reporting for Studio 7 from Bulawayo, this is Taurai Shava.
Young people in Zimbabwe with disabilities say they are facing various challenges, including lack of access to education, jobs, and basic necessities. They say government should step in order to ensure that they are well catered for. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke to Begezela Nkosana with the Progressive Bulawayo Residents Association on the challenges youth with disabilities face.
Not a lot of people are with disabilities are politically aware or integrated. People take advantage of them. The politician comes up with a plan, you know, a framework that's presented to the people, and the people with disability, they clap because, I mean, they're getting attention for the first time. They don't design it on their own. Whatever programs or structures or whatever these political parties are coming with, I mean, but that's the political angle.
And when you speak about this issue of the community and programs, what should be there?
This should be programs, you know. Social workers could be trained more to address the disability issue. I mean, we should work hand in hand. I mean, doctors should investigate more on disabilities and stuff and educate people. It should become common knowledge what you have to do if you've got muscular dystrophy.
That was Bekezela Nkosana of the Progressive Bulawayo Residents Association speaking on the line with Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo.
And in our sports segment, the Zimbabwe Special Olympics team has left for the one-week World Summer Games to be held in Los Angeles in the USA. Reporter Michael Cariati has more details from Harare.
The team has promised a harvest of medals from the biggest sporting gathering for athletes with intellectual and learning disabilities, which will run in Los Angeles from July 25 to August 2. The team has been in camp for some time, and head of delegation Viola Msariri says morale is high and promises a good display by the Zimbabweans.
They've been competing throughout the whole year, so our expectations is for us to come back with the medals, just like any competition that you compete in, and we are positive that we'll be coming back with the medals.
Zimbabwe has sent 15 athletes to the games, but Msariri says a lot is expected from Nyasha Derera, who she believes will definitely bring home one or two medals.
Derera, for the track and field events, he's been performing well and he's brought back home a number of medals. And in golf, we've got Munyaradzi Msariri as well as Michael Mjiganadzo. We have brought back gold from South Africa and from Macau.
Derera himself has promised to make Zimbabwe proud.
My passion is to bring gold for Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe were last at the World Summer Games in Shanghai, China in 2007, where they sent 19 athletes who brought home 16 medals in golf, athletics, and swimming. The country missed out of the 2011 Games as there was no operational body of the Zimbabwe Special Olympics Association after the association had been deregistered by the Sports and Recreation Commission. According to Msariri, this time they will participate only in golf and athletics due to financial constraints. The seven-a-side soccer team had to be dropped at the last minute because of lack of funds. More than 30 countries and over 7,000 athletes are expected to take part in the World Summer Games. The athletes will participate in 26 different sporting disciplines. The games will be officially opened by the United States First Lady Michelle Obama, wife of President Barack Obama. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Cariati.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host of the Youth Connection, Tatenda Gumbo and Tungamili Nkomo, will be talking with listeners and experts about young people living with disabilities.
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios.
And now to recap today's top stories.
A messenger of court attempts to attach property belonging to Movement for Democratic Change founding president Morgan Tsvangirai.
More than 500 workers have been fired in Zimbabwe since last Friday following a Supreme Court ruling that companies can terminate employees' contracts without offering benefits.
And more than 130 former Shabane mine workers have been evicted from company houses in Rishavane, Midlands Province.
That's our broadcast this evening.
Now, please stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Standegle Mhlanga. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night, Zimbabwe.